I'm Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. We're going to talk about travel tips. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. Amy Farley is back with us. She is news editor at Travel and Leisure Magazine. She writes a column called Upgrade. And we're going to talk about, in particular, maybe some stealth destinations for vacations. We're going to talk about these online sites that claim to be able to predict with tremendous accuracy when you should spring for the ticket, buy the ticket, and they make guesses based on lots of data. The question is, do they work? We're looking at some of these topics because Amy has suggested, and they're in the new issue of Travel and Leisure magazine, and not only is she good at what she does, but she's good to us and shares the best of what she knows just as the magazine comes out. It's good for her, but it's really great for us. I've gotten so many tips, and Amy doesn't mind where we travel in terms of our conversation. So we're going to open the phones to you and invite you to ask all the travel questions you've always wanted to ask. Amy Farley is a wealth of information and just a gem at the magazine. So our number here is 203-776-WNPR, 203-776-WNPR. Amy, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, so here's a thing. I was sitting there before the show started, and I know this isn't on our list of topics, but I thought, where is a stealth destination and for the summer? And one thing that popped into my head was, yes, Aruba, because Aruba has nice weather in the summer. And then I thought of course, Bermuda, terrific. But the one place that people don't seem to talk too much about, and for me, is like going to Europe, is Canada.
Well, I talk about it a lot because I married a Canadian.
Oh.
I have to say, Montreal, which is where my husband is from in the summer, is such an amazing destination. There's, you know, the old city, it dates back to he's going to kill me if I get this wrong, but the 16th century, mm-hmm. If not the 17th, but I'm pretty sure it's the 16th century. And it's got, you know, immense history. It feels like you're sort of in the heart of sort of historical Paris in some regards. But then it also has this super vibrant, really exciting contemporary culture to it. There's a lot of people that work in sort of the design fields and kind of creative fields that live and work in Montreal. The food scene there is extraordinary.
Uh-huh.
And then Montreal has a phenomenal jazz festival that takes place in the summer. And you can go there and you can, you know, pay to go see a concert indoors, but you can also sort of walk around just about every corner in the city. There's some band set up playing an incredible concert.
And there's a comedy festival.
And the comedy festival. Summer is sort of a string of festivals, yeah.
How about the fireworks? Have you ever seen the fireworks festival?
No, I've never caught that.
Oh, they've had on many occasions the international fireworks competition. So countries from around the world are competing. And you see things that are the most dazzling. You think it's not even possible for a human being to create some of these things.
That's extra. I love that tip. You're going to see that on a slideshow about that on Travel Nature sometimes.
Okay. So I'm so glad we talked about this.
The other thing I should point out is that the U.S. dollar is very strong against the Canadian dollar right now.
20% discount.
Yeah, so it's a really great time to go to Canada, go shopping. If you're a big fan of, you know, those Lululemon yoga pants, they're, you know, 20% off if you cross the border. So.
That's right. and then the one thing I haven't done is go out into the countryside in Canada. Mm. Every time I read an article, it convinces me it's like being in Burgundy in France. The way things are so unspoiled and farms are doing what they do, making, you know, having 12 cows that make the most gorgeous cheese on earth, that kind of thing.
There's, you know, there's a beautiful region in Quebec called Charlevoix, which is known for its cheeses and its sort of, grassroots food producers and purveyors. And so that's a beautiful region to drive around. From your launching off point for that region is Quebec City, which is, now that's definitely dating from the 15th century or from the 16th century.
Yeah.
And that's a beautiful town. And from there, you can get a car and drive out into the Charlevoix region. There's also a cool region. We covered this recently in, I believe it's in our May issue of Travel and Leisure, an area in Ontario, it's a couple of hours outside of Toronto, called the Prince Edward County, not to be confused with Prince Edward Island, but this is Prince Edward County. And there's some neat inns and hotels in that area, and it's an up-and-coming wine region as well. So that's a great destination this summer as well.
So are you talking about the place? It begins with an O. Is it O? It's not Oneegan.
There's Okanagan Valley. Is
that's it. I heard that's unbelievable as a wine valley.
Yeah, Okanagan is out on the west. That's in British Columbia, and that produces arguably. There's a Niagara wine region in Ontario, and they would say they produce the best wines. But a lot of that is ice wines, those very sweet wines.
Yeah.
The Okanagan Valley out in the west is, you know, to rival Napa Valley in sort of the quality of wines they're producing. And that's a great destination as well.
And it's supposed to be very warm and beautiful, really beautiful. Okay, well, that was good. That's one of my best things.
So, yes, absolutely. I wholeheartedly endorse travel to Canada this summer.
Okay. let's get to this because, we've got a call. But then I want to talk about this kit that you have kind of put together if you're going to do some road travel, or in the air. But what kind of things you want to have set to go so that you have everything you need? And I like this list. We're going to get to that in a second.
Right.
Mike, Faith Middleton with Amy Farley of Travel and Leisure Magazine. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, hi, Faith.
Hi.
Hello, Amy.
Hi.
We're traveling to meet up with my two sons who are going to be meeting in Greece in July 3rd specifically. So my wife and I are just flying in from the States for like a week, planning to get like an Airbnb on the beach somewhere. Any ideas to get the cheapest air flight aside from getting on a Russian jet?
Don't get on a Russian jet.
we can
do better than that. You know, I would do there is a great website, and I feel like I always talk about this when I'm on your show, Faith, but it's called Adioso. Adioso, Adioso, and Adioso is a great what we call flexible fare searching site, and there you can, if your dates are slightly flexible or if your destinations are slightly flexible, it's really good at finding you sort of the most affordable airfare. It's also great if you want to fly into a different city. I mean, if you fly into Athens, that's one thing, but there are some sort of cities that you can fly into in Europe that are significantly less for the transatlantic flight, and then you could catch a low cost carrier into Athens. And Adioso could help you find those. There's one airline that launched this summer flying from the U.S. into Europe. It's called Norwegian Air, and it offers cut rate flights into London, into Stockholm, which is its home. Oslo, it's his home base, but into Stockholm and Oslo and Copenhagen. And often from there, you can catch a low-cost flight into Athens. So it may be a question of tagging on a longer flight time to bring down that cost.
Right.
But if you have that flexibility, it's good to look into. Oh, and there's another Icelandic carrier called WOW Air. Pretty far north up to Reykjavik, but they have flights for, you know, $400 from the East Coast into Reykjavik, and then WOW is a low-cost carrier, so you can hop another WOW flight to other parts of Europe.
Okay.
Great. Cool. Have a great time, Mike.
Yeah, it's going to be hot, I know.
No, but wonderful.
Oh, beautiful. You're on the beach. It doesn't matter.
Think of the food, Mike.
I'm thinking of it now.
Okay.
I'll think of you guys when I'm there.
Oh, great. Thanks a lot. We want a postcard.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. So if people are saying, you know what, stumbled on a little bit of money here, and so let's do it. Let's take a trip. This is kind of late to be booking for Europe, but let's say somebody wants to go somewhere in Italy. Would you say all those same sites would be the places to check?
Yeah, you know, I think at this point, there are some places, you know, there are sort of resorts in Greece and Italy and things like that that'll be all booked up. And those, you know, those direct flights, and not just to Europe. I mean, if you want to fly to, you know, a beautiful city in the Colorado Rockies, if you want to go to Aspen or Vail or something like that and catch that direct flight from the East Coast, you're going to have a hard time finding that perfect flight at that low cost or that low price. But if you can be flexible, a site like Adioso is terrific because it lets you pinpoint sort of what day you could leave, what city you can go to get the lowest fare. So let's just say you want to get to Europe. You know you want to go for a week. You can be pretty flexible, and you know you want to go somewhere in Europe for under $700. You can actually sort of search under those terms on Adioso, and it will help you pinpoint what destination to go to.
Okay.
So I think the key is to be flexible, either about your dates or your destination, and that's how you find the lowest fares.
Okay, excellent. So now we're going to talk about traveling pretty much in country. So let's say we're here and we might be going someplace in the U.S., renting a car, who knows. But the article that you folks did was about hitting the road this summer. And what are the essential things that you need to take with you?
Well, I think some of the, you know, in the last few years, there have been a lot of apps and services, digital services that will help you on your road trip. And we try to distill it down to the few that you really, truly want to make sure you have on hand. So it actually starts with making sure you have a car charger for your smartphone, because you will run through your smartphone battery pretty quickly by running all these apps and mapping services. So there's a lot of different ones on the market. We recommend one that's made by Ventev. It's called the Dashport, and it's a really great universal charger. It will charge your phone really quickly for your car. So that's a key thing to bring with you.
Yeah, and that's a good. That's around $35, so that's not going to break the bank.
Yeah. Yep. And then when you're mapping, you know, Google Maps I really like, but Google Maps has purchased this this service called Waze, which basically will direct you from A to B, but it also has real live updated from other drivers sort of ahead of you on the road, traffic updates or road accident updates. Will even let you know if there's a police waiting there with a speed trap. So it's a terrific tool to sort of really know, especially if you're traveling over sort of Memorial Day weekend or any holiday weekend and you want to make sure that you are avoiding the traffic. Waze has those updates that will help you.
And that's W-A-Z-E?
W-A-Z-E, yeah.
Yeah, yep. So go ahead.
Oh, and then Gas Buddy is a terrific app. I mean, people are less concerned about fuel prices because obviously it's more affordable at the tank. But Gas Buddy does sort of compile the gas prices of gas stations across the country. And so you can use Gas Buddy to pinpoint which gas station around you has the lowest fuel prices. So that's always convenient.
I thought this was an amazing app. I didn't know that Android had this, but they have this app. You know, if you're listening to the radio when you're traveling, Tune In Radio, right? And it's free.
It's terrific, free, and it will, I mean, it has thousands of radio stations across the globe. So you can listen to, you know, talk radio, to public radio, news stations, whatever it is. So it's a fun way. It's fun to check out the local stations around you. But also, you know, you can be driving through Wyoming and listening to a New Zealand radio station. So it's a super fun way to sort of explore the world through your car.
I want to talk very quickly before we get into some other things about the top three things to know before you take a rental car, because this is going to be important this summer. Stay where you are. Amy Farley of Travel and Leisure Magazine. We'll take a quick break and more phone calls at 203-776-WNPR. Travel tips. We'll be right back. I'm Faith Middleton. Thanks to our producer today, Jonathan McNichol, and to Marion Roy for her production assistance on the show. She is an avid traveler, so this is a good one for her to sit in on. We have Amy Farley with us, news editor at Travel and Leisure Magazine, back again, and she writes the upgrade column for the magazine and just knows so much. So Amy, I want to take a call, and then let's get to these three important things to know about rental cars. One of them is very surprising to me. I didn't know this. Jackie, hi, Faith Middleton. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you, Amy and Faith.
Sure.
I don't find a lot of information about India, and I'm planning to go to India. I would plan to stay a month. And the main issue is flights. And I really don't know. Well, I'm not. To put it kindly, I'm not tech savvy.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if, but I will ask someone who is to help me.
Sure.
And if you have some idea of how I might find economical flights that have a good record of safety.
Okay. Mm. Yeah. Good idea.
Well, I would.
So
say
that's my main concern.
Okay. Let's find.
There,
let's.
I'll be in an ashram, and I don't have to worry about, you know, expenses.
Okay, very Jackie. Much. Let's find out for you. For
so
you.
Are you just looking basically from flights to the States to India, or in, flights within India?
No, from the States to India, I'd be going from New York to Bangalore.
Okay.
And then on from there, you know. But
yeah. Well, I would just look at. I mean, if you have a. I don't know all the alliance partners, but if you have a preferred carrier here in the U.S., I would find out who its alliance partners are. And
what does that mean?
Sorry, there's global alliances of airlines. So there's the Star Alliance, there's the One World Alliance, and that's, you know, a U.S. carrier has partnerships with airlines around the world, reputable, good airlines around the world. And they, you know, allow passengers to book flights on one another's and earn points on one another's airlines. So if there is an airline that you feel comfortable with and fly with in the U.S., it surely has, it may fly directly into India, or it will have partners that fly into India. And if you like to collect frequent flyer miles, it's always good, because that's a long flight and you can bank a lot of miles on that flight. It's always good to collect those points. So I would take a look and find out who the alliance partners are of your airline and see if they have flights into India. Or if you're just looking for cut rate prices, then I would look on a website like Adioso or Kayak, and if you can find somebody to help you search on that, that will show you all of the flights available to you. And then you can do a little research on those airlines and see if there's a foreign carrier that you're not familiar with. Look and see if it's part of one of these global alliances. Because if it is part of a global alliance, that means it has a partnership with a U.S. carrier. And if it has a partnership with a U.S. carrier, that means it is reputable and has a good safety record.
Good, good, good. Yeah. Okay, Jackie, so Adioso and Kayak are the two
sites. Kayak. Kayak, K-A-Y-A-K. That's another good
airfare. One question. Is it possible... Korean Air, I've had very good experience with Korean Air. You said an American airline. Could I ask the same of Korean Air?
Yeah, well, Korean Air is in an alliance with Delta Airlines.
Okay.
So, yeah, and Korean is a terrific airline. And so I don't think Korean flies into India, but they have, I'm not sure who their Indian partner was, but they probably have an Indian partner or one of the Middle East carriers. There's a lot of carriers now that fly from the U.S. through Dubai or Emirates somewhere and will fly on to India. So that could be a good option as well.
Good luck, Jackie. Okay. Have a great time.
Thank you.
Okay.
Have a wonderful trip.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye. So let's do this rental car thing. Before you're getting a rental car, the number one thing, I agree with this, check your current insurance coverage. I always say call the company and ask them. Don't just read on your piece of paper. Just call them and ask them. Say,
absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. But especially, you know, there's obviously your car rental or your car insurance that you have, but also your credit card often has insurance associated with it that would work for a rental car. However, you need to decline it's usually called the collision damage waiver from the rental car company for your credit card insurance to be activated. So just know what sort of the provisions are for your credit card insurance to be activated.
So you want to check with your own auto insurance company and you want to check with your credit card company.
Yes, check both of those. The other trick, though, is that your credit card company may have further exemptions for vehicles. There's some countries that a lot of credit cards won't cover rental cars in, and I'm not entirely sure why, but Ireland and Israel are most of their lists and other countries. I think Jamaica might be on some. And then they also sometimes won't cover luxury rentals or any cars that you're planning on taking off-roading. So just make sure that you know the fine print of that credit card policy.
I can't think of how far back I would have to go to remember a time when I actually got the car that I ordered on the phone.
Mm.
So what, is there anything that can be done about that?
Not really. I mean, there is one interesting rental car company. It's not inexpensive, but it's called Silver Car, and it only rents, now I'm going to forget what it is. It's an Audi.
Uh-huh.
It's an Audi something.
Yeah, the sedan.
Yeah, a luxury Audi car, and it only has one model of vehicles on the lot, and it actually will come and pick you up at the airport door and drive you, you know, sort of personally chauffeur you to the lot to get your car, so you don't have to sit there and wait for the, you know, for the bus to come and drive you to your car rental agency. So it's a very luxury experience. It's called Silver Car. That is one way to guarantee that you get the car that you want, because they only carry one car. But,
right.
You know, I think the main thing is to make sure that you're not upsold as unnecessarily. And this has actually happened to me where I've gone in to, you know, pick up my economy class car, you know, the bit most fuel efficient car I could find. And they've tried to, you know, sell me on a four-wheel drive vehicle, and I've said, no, thank you. And they'll say, but it's only a $20 a day upgrade. And then you say, no, thank you. And then they'll look at their computer and say, well, actually, we don't have your model available, so we're going to have to give you that four-wheel drive vehicle.
So they're
actually trying to sell you the thing that they have to give you. So just make sure that they have your car on the lot before they actually try to sell you the upgrade.
It's too bad we have to spend so much energy, you know, doing it like this. But Kevin, thank you for calling 203-776-WNPR. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hi, Faith, my favorite show.
Oh,
thank
you.
Hi.
I turned 50 this year, just last month, and on my bucket list of things to accomplish in this next half century is to go to the country of Mauritius in the northern tip of Africa.
Good choice.
All I can read online is things about the culture and all of that. So I was hoping that you could give some more information in regards to that area.
To be honest, I can't give you that much. I know it has a rich culture and great beach resorts. I'm trying to think of the last time we covered it extensively in our pages, and it's been a while. But you could go to travelandleisure.com and look up Mauritius.
Okay.
And I know we have covered some resorts there and some experiences there. But to be honest, not recently. So we may need to get your report when you get back, and you can tell us.
Definitely. I have to cover. This is on my bucket list. So.
Good for you, Kevin. I hope
you,
that works.
Thank you very much. And Faith, I love your show. I listen any chance that I get.
Oh, Kevin, that is the nicest thing to say that. Thank you so much.
And the best to you.
Thank you. You too. I like this article about fare casting. These are sites that say that crunching all the numbers, they can tell us when we should jump in and actually buy the ticket to get the best fare, et cetera. So how you decided to survey these? How did it work?
Well, so, I mean, I know one of the most excruciating things for me about booking tickets is you look up a flight and you just don't know whether or not that airfare is going to go up or go down. And you don't want to be the sucker that buys your ticket and then the fare drops by $100. But you also don't want to, you know, wait a day and dither and then see it rise by $100. So there are three different services that help you sort of predict whether or not your airfare is going to rise and fall. Kayak, which is that airfare search site that I mentioned earlier, is great. They offer you a little sort of, it doesn't cover all routes, but it covers a lot of them. It will include a sort of an outlook about whether or not they think the fare is going to rise or going to fall or it's going to stay steady, and they'll give you a sort of confidence rating on that assessment. And then there's two other services that are interesting. One is called Flyr, and it's just spelled F-L-Y-R. And it basically lets you search for a specific flight. So the thing about Kayak, it will search a route. So say I wanted to find out flights between say New York and Vail, Colorado, or Vail Eagle, Colorado. Kayak would tell me if flights, if prices were going to go up and down, or give me its assessment if prices are going to go up and down for that route. But that may include flights directly to Vail Eagle, flights that fly through Atlanta there, you know, all different permutations to get to that one destination.
So
Flyer.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, I was going to say Flyer, F-L-Y-R, you can actually look up a specific flight. So if you have your eye on one specific flight and you say, I just don't know whether or not I should book this today or next week, Flyer will give you a prediction about whether or not it's going to rise and fall based on all of its data.
And they'll say wait or buy. So that's F-L-Y-R for Flyer.
Flyer. And then the third one is called Hopper. And that's a fun one, and that is a lot like what Kayak does. What's interesting about Hopper is that the gestation period for Hopper, it's taken the people who worked on it about 8 years, I think, to put it together and finally launch it. It shows because it has about 8 years worth of data behind it, and so its predictions we found were pretty accurate. I mean, none of them are perfect, but Hopper really does have a lot of data backing it up. So when it tells you whether or not it thinks an airfare is going to rise or fall, it's quite often pretty close to being right.
Well, of the three that you tested against each other, Flyer, Kayak, and Hopper was the most accurate of the three.
Yeah, we tested on 10 different routes, and we just sort of tracked the fares every day for a couple of weeks to see how they did and sort of marked all of their scores and then averaged it out. And it was Hopper came in with a 72% accuracy rating, Flyer was 67, and Kayak was 61. So, you know, it's not a huge spread between Flyer and Hopper, but we did give a slight edge to Hopper.
So Kayak also did something. They decided to crunch numbers and see, if you looked at the history of all of this, when is the ideal time to buy a ticket? So when are the fares lowest is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because it's not just about sort of, you know, I could look for airfares this week, you know, for my trip to Athens in August. And these sites will tell you whether or not I should book it, you know, today or wait 7 days. But really, should I be looking for tickets to Greece in August, you know, only 3 months in advance or 4 months in advance? And the answer is actually I should be planning about 5 months in advance. This is according to Kayak. So we asked them sort of how far in advance, if you want to find the lowest fare, how far in advance should you start that search and really be looking to buy? So for Europe, it's really 26 weeks in ahead that you should.
Yes, that was glum news.
Yeah.
I just thought, oh, my goodness, can you imagine if you That's tough, but anyway.
Yeah. Within North America, 4 to 6 weeks is a sweet spot, and South America is 3 to 6 weeks, so you can plan more last-minute trips to South America. Asia, I find this very interesting. Asia, the sweet spot, is only 5 weeks in advance. That is very, you know, it takes you about a month to get your visa to China, so don't it's not advisable to wait just 5 weeks before booking a trip to Asia. However, it does have a shorter booking window. And also the Caribbean, only 2 to 4 weeks in advance. That's when Kayak was finding the lowest fares.
Hey, you know what bears repeating is your passport. If you are planning to travel this summer, you hadn't planned on it, now is the time to go into the file and check your passport, because it turns out that you can't go to Europe if your passport is going to expire in less than 6 months, 6 months or less. Have I got that right?
Europe, Asia, I'm actually going to China in 2 weeks, and you need to be able to show that your passport is valid for another 6 months, because that's, you know, a lot of visas are for 6 months, and so they want to make sure that you're not going to be in their country and have your passport expire while you're there. So the passport expiration date, do not pay attention to it. Backdate it, you know, by another 6 months, even 9 months to be safe, and that's when you should look to renew your passport for sure.
Oh, can't wait to get to this. And we want to invite you to jump in and ask your travel questions of Amy Farley, who is the news editor at Travel and Leisure Magazine, is on our show frequently, and she writes the Upgrade column for them. Cuba. Let's get into this. By the way, our phone number is 203-776-7777. 203-776-9677. That's 203-776-WNPR. Cuba. So I hear various things. I hear, oh, yes, you can just go if you do this, that, and the other thing. And then I hear it's actually pretty hard to go. So what's the deal?
Well, the deal is it's a gray area right now. I think the real question you have to ask yourself is, do you want to go on your own or do you want to go with a tour operator? You can go on your own now. There are services, and they're coming online practically every week, that will enable you to get to Cuba on your own. You can book a flight. There now are charter flights that fly direct from New York, from Fort Lauderdale, from Miami. There's this charter service called Cuba Travel Services, and they have charter flights into Havana. And you can book your ticket directly on Cuba Travel Services website or on the website cheapair.com. So you can book yourself to Havana, and now Airbnb lists rooms in Cuba, and so you could book an Airbnb if you wanted to in Havana or some other cities. And you can go there. In the past, the U.S. State Department only let travelers the State Department only lets travelers who fall under one of 12 different categories of travel to Cuba. So you have to be sort of there as on sort of religious tourism, educational tourism, there's sports tourism, there's business travel, and there's also this more sort of amorphous category called people-to-people travel, which is basically interaction with the Cuban people so that they gain a better understanding of Americans and we gain a better understanding of Cubans. So almost every travel will sort of fall under this people-to-people category. Mm-hmm. In the past, you had to apply for a license. You had to show the State Department your itinerary. It had to meet all these requirements in order to get the license to go there. So people had to go through tour operators. Now it seems, and there's a big caveat, but it seems that that there is not sort of that itinerary requirement. You may be audited sometime later after you get back from your trip. Somebody somewhere with the U.S. government may ask you to show some documentation that your trip to Cuba fulfilled one of these 12 kind of missions. However, nobody's really asking for these documents right now. So in that sort of, in this gray area, a lot of people are traveling to Cuba, and they're booking these charter flights, and they're staying in Airbnb. However, once they get there, there's not a strong tourism infrastructure there the way there are in other places around the world, or the way there is in other places around the world. So you might find yourself slightly at odds or at ends trying to figure out what to do with yourself. So it still is, if you want to have a real free-spirited, make-your-own-way kind of trip to Cuba, you absolutely can do that. But there also are a lot of tour operators who have been working in Cuba for many years and have great contacts on the ground. They can get you into the art galleries. They can introduce you to musicians and show you to the good restaurants. And, they're sort of house restaurants. It's very sort of low-key. It's not fine dining the way we would experience it elsewhere.
Right, yeah, understandable.
Yeah, but so these tour operators can really sort of enable, a more interesting trip. So it's really up to you. If you feel like sort of freewheeling it, you can certainly get there. But also you'll have to sort of bear in mind that your credit cards aren't accepted many places or most places.
Yeah, and there are lots of academic organizations doing trips to Cuba, too, so that's something to check on. Amy Farley, stay right where you are. We're going to take a quick break and then more phone calls at 203-776-WNPR. If you have travel questions, now is the time to ask them. Stay with us. I'm Faith Middleton, and if you want to travel to something pretty terrific, I have an invitation to you for you as we go back to our conversation with Amy Farley. We are calling it the hottest scene in Connecticut. It certainly is one of them. Yeah, since we don't want to exaggerate too much, but I'll tell you, it is the most fun party of the year. It is our Food Schmooze Martini Competition, where statewide bartenders shake up these innovative martinis, and you vote after sampling for the Food Schmooze Martini Champion. We have a designated driver discount, great top chefs providing food. Our DJ is sizzling, and it sells out. This is Thursday, June 25th. Wall-to-wall people, it is the greatest place to meet somebody. 6 p.m. at Simsbury's Riverview, and thanks to Power Station Events, we have people working on lighting and flowers and design. Tickets are $60 to benefit WNPR and the Food Schmooze. You can order right now at ctmartini.org, ctmartini.org. My guest is Amy Farley, back with us. She is news editor at Travel and Leisure magazine. She writes the Upgrade column, and we're continuing to talk a little bit about Cuba. Amy, why don't I take a call, and then I want to discuss Airbnb with you for a second. John, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much. Enjoy the show today.
Thank you.
My question is, I unfortunately don't get to do a lot of traveling these days, and when I do, it's usually kind of last minute, and just have to try to get something quickly, and that means I usually can't take advantage of really good fares for air flight. One of the things I've been looking at a little bit lately is it's an application, and I think there's a website too, called Skiplag, and it's a whole different approach to, which is some maybe only marginally legitimate to traveling via air, and I wondered if your guest was familiar with that and what she thinks of it.
Can you repeat the name of it?
Yeah.
Skiplag. Okay, you know what it is.
Yeah. To be honest, I'm not totally familiar. I know they. I believe Skiplag was doing the selling fares where you wouldn't sort of selling to. They were sort of operating in a little bit of a gray area where they, if you buy a ticket, a round-trip ticket, and you only take one leg of it, then the rest of your ticket sort of goes void. And you shouldn't actually, the airlines don't endorse that. They actually, it's not legal to do that. If you buy a round-trip ticket, you have to sort of take the return. Obviously, they're not going to penalize you for it, but Skiplag was, I believe, selling these kinds of tickets where it was sort of basically two one-way tickets, but actually selling you two round-trip tickets. It sort of was operating this weird gray area, and it sort of got a cease and desist order from airlines. There's a lot of, it's actually very interesting what's happening because a lot of different websites are sort of finding those little hacker tricks for great airfares and making them available to the wider public by creating a sort of automated process for you to access them. And some of them, are doing it and it's absolutely fine. Kayak started this, stepped into the void about a decade ago when it started selling what was called hacker fares, which is two one-way tickets from different airlines, packaging it as a round-trip ticket, and that fare is often lower than the round-trip ticket on a single airline. And that actually is perfectly legal, and so that's something that's now well established. So I think Skiplag was sort of operating in a gray area, and it got its wrist slapped by the airlines. But I think it's also I think it does have other tricks for finding good airfares. It was one little thing it was doing that was sort of not kosher with the airlines, but I think everything else is fine.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Good luck. 203-776-WNPR. To what extent are people using Airbnb? I mean, we know the numbers. We can see them in media stories. But in your experience talking with people, have you seen this thing skyrocket? Or what's happening from your chair?
Oh, absolutely. Airbnb is huge. I think it has absolutely changed the travel landscape. And hotel CEOs, when they're looking, Airbnb doesn't directly compete with hotels, but it does enough that when hotels are, looking at building a property in a city, and they say sort of what is already in the market here, they will factor in Airbnb rooms because, if there's too much Airbnb availability, they may not enter into that market because they think it's too saturated. So Travelers are definitely using it. Hotel CEOs are looking at it as competition, but they won't actually admit that because they don't want to really admit it.
Of course it's competition.
Of course it's competition. And it sort of changed the way a lot of people operate travel or think about travel because it sort of opened the door to regular people being able to offer travel experiences for other people. So, you know, I can pretend or I can play the role of hotelier and open my doors and create a sort of hotel-like experience in my apartment. I don't actually do this because I wouldn't dare subject anybody to my apartment. I've got two kids under the age of five. It is not shareable.
That's the funniest idea, that Amy Farley is running an Airbnb room in her apartment. Go ahead.
No way. But, you know, the idea that a regular person can play the role of a hotelier has sort of filtered out into people that open up. There's websites called Feastly and Eat With. That lets people open up their dining room.
Yeah.
They get to play the role of chef. And, you know, you sort of have a dinner in a private home. There now is a website called Viable, which lets anybody who is really passionate about a subject, knows a lot about something, who wants to share that with travelers, they can put up walking tour offerings for travelers. And so you can get people that are, you know, really knowledgeable about ethnic food in the Lower East Side of Manhattan offering phenomenal walking tours, you know, really authentic walking tours. So there's this whole idea of what we call peer-to-peer travel, which is sort of taking out that sort of really professional level, and it's connecting you directly with people in a destination who know their city or their area really well, are passionate about it, and want to share it. And it's a phenomenal way to experience a place. There's obviously risks associated with it because you don't know if you're going to get you know what you're going to get if you book into a Marriott or a Four Seasons. Not so true with Airbnb and these other services, but that's also half the fun.
Yeah, and you have to be careful. I mean, it goes without saying. Mm-hmm. But I have a friend who does this in the city of New Haven, and she said that her place is a romantic stop. And I said, what? And she said, I just happen to be located in a corridor where people have gotten into relationships and they work, you know, one might work in Boston, the other one in New York. I'm the halfway point, and they freely say, you know, this is how we get to see each other. So and they become frequent guests.
Love that. That's another great story for Travel and Leisure.
Okay, that's the deal. All right, Stacy, Faith Middleton, welcome to the show with Amy Farley of Travel and Leisure magazine. Go ahead.
Thank you so much.
Hi. You're
welcome. Hi. I'm fortunate in that my husband and I travel all over the world. We've been to Mongolia and Burma and Bhutan and every crazy place you can imagine. So we really enjoy travel, and we feel like it's the very, very best way to expand our mind. Just for whatever it's worth, we do Airbnb a lot, and we've had 99% good experiences, so I highly recommend it. I would advise your listeners to just really research the areas that they're getting Airbnb, make sure that the neighborhood is what they want to be in, and, you know, try to get as much info from the person who's going to be meeting them, that kind of thing, because the only negative experience we had is just sort of not having an organized meeting place.
Oh, okay.
So that's my little input for that.
Yeah.
My question is, we are scheduled to do a trek in Nepal in October, and we're just, of course, like everyone else, devastated by the news.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering what your feeling is about going there. We'd love to be able to support the economy because so much of their economy is based
tourism.
On tourism.
Yeah.
But I'm a little more reluctant than my intrepid husband. Not so much that, you know, there would be another earthquake, but just that the devastation might still be so in flux. And,
I would. If that's really interesting. I mean, it is true. Tourism is huge for Nepal, and that is your tourism dollars will go right towards rebuilding, and would be sort of powerful in that regard. I'm not sure what the state of affairs would be on the ground. It definitely wouldn't be a simple trek, you would obviously be grappling with some a much more sort of intense cultural interaction, because you'd be seeing a destination in the process of rebuilding. That could be really powerful, though. I would talk to your tour operator, especially if they're bringing people to Nepal. They must have a lot of eyes and ears on the ground, and will probably give you a very frank assessment, because they don't want to bring somebody who's not prepared for the state of affairs into a country. So I would talk to them and really get a sense of what it's like on the ground, what their policy is for refunds or sort of rebooking if you want to move your trip to a later date. You should also look into getting, if you haven't already, getting travel insurance in case something does happen or you do want to change your plans. But I would talk to your tour operator. I mean, I do think October, there's a fair amount that will be still under works. I mean, obviously the devastation of sort of historic Kathmandu is terrible, but you might find that you actually have a richer experience because people are really excited to see you there.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
We'd like to think of it that way. As far as you know, are there any restrictions going there right now?
You can look that up online, Stacey, at the State Department.
Yeah, right. Okay.
They're usually pretty up to date, right?
Oh, yeah, they up to date all the time. The State Department is terrific for their country guides. Yeah.
Okay. That's great advice. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling. Amy, do you get travel insurance for every single travel experience of yours, you know, every trip you take?
I do not. You know, if I'm flying to visit family in, you know, Minneapolis, I won't insure that trip. But anything that involves sort of a tour operator or paying in advance, you know, a down payment, anything like that, definitely get travel insurance. It's affordable. It gives you peace of mind. Anytime you have put down more money than you are willing to lose, it's worth getting travel insurance. If you do want to insure, this is a neat trick I learned from a travel agent. Mm-hmm. But if you're concerned about your bags going missing or any sort of interruption because of your luggage or a extended flight delay, and you just want to get insurance for your flight, you can go on to, you know, say Travel Guard or Allianz and fill out as though you're getting regular trip insurance, but when it says, you know, what is the cost of trip, put zero, because really all you want to insure is your flight. You don't want to insure any expenses associated with the trip. And so sometimes if I'm flying and I feel a little bit nervous about my bag and I want to get extra coverage in case I need to buy supplies on the road, I'll do that. And that's, you know, a matter of $10 to cover your flight. So it's pretty cheap.
$10 to cover your bags, your luggage?
Your bag and sort of an extended flight delay or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah.
I had an experience with this and had an injury I had taken out travel insurance, and I expected a very difficult time. And, you know, they said, understandably, let's see a note from your doctor. And I was able to provide that, and the check was right there.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah, it was good experience. Okay, we have about a minute to go, so I'm afraid to go to the phones. If you're still hanging on, I'm sorry about that. Okay, so are you going anywhere on vacation this summer?
This summer I'll be going to Montreal.
Out to the city? In the city, or are you going to go out into the country?
I think probably just Montreal. I may try to get out into the Charlevoix area as well. But we'll see.
Lucky you.
Yeah.
Okay, I hope I run into you there. I'd like to do that myself if
we'll
I can.
We'll go on a road trip.
Okay. What a riot. All right, thanks, Amy. Talk to you soon, I hope.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye. Amy Farley, who is news editor at Travel and Leisure Magazine, she writes the Upgrade column. As always, this show is about the richness of life, and you can find so many of the things we talk about, including recipes, food, value wines, everything at foodschmooze.org or the Faith Middleton Show, WNPR.org. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.